39. Behind the Mask. On his fourth day of rest, Modo sat on a chaise lounge at the edge of a large balcony overlooking Kew Gardens. The view of shrubs, trees, and a glasshouse reminded him of Ravenscroft. He passed his time dressed in nightclothes and a heavy, warm robe, his face behind a white mask. A nightcap hid his pockmarked skull. The sun warmed him, and a pug-nosed servant brought him tea and food and the Times whenever he desired it. He was becoming especially fond of croissants and jam. Not once did he see a mention in the papers of the attack on the Houses of Parliament. All he found were a couple of paragraphs about renovations and a piece about a tunnel collapsing directly beneath St. James's Square. Obviously, the Permanent Association's influence ran deep within the publishers' networks. How all the witnesses were silenced, Modo didn't know. But if no one would print their words other than the most disreputable papers, the whole event would eventually become little more than fodder for drunken pub tales. Today, Modo's morning paper ritual was interrupted by the tap of a walking stick and the scrape of a chair on the floor. He lowered the Times to see Mr. Socrates sitting across from him. The bruise below his eye was gone. "How goes your recuperation?" Mr. Socrates asked.
"I'm doing well, sir. I enjoy being pampered."
"You deserve the rest. You achieved so much in a short time." Modo smiled behind the mask.
"I've been taught well."
Mr. Socrates let out a short laugh.
"I don't need compliments, young man. And let's not forget that you did disobey me when you chose to confront the mechanized Leviathan on your own. I suppose it's a sign that you can think for yourself. But I could have lost you."
Was that emotion in his voice? Modo looked him in the eyes, but they gave nothing away. "Don't disobey me again," Mr. Socrates said.
"If I hadn't disobeyed you, many of those children would have died," he thought. But Modo decided it was best just to nod in agreement.
"What will become of the orphans?" he asked finally.
"They lost their wolf-like features as the tincture wore off, and so far none of them has had any measurable after-effects. We've been removing the bolts so they can live normal lives. The association has set up an orphanage for the ones who have no caregivers. In time, they'll likely find employment in the colonies."
"There was a boy. His name was Oppie."
"What of him?"
"Oppie?"
"Yes, Octavia asked about him, too. And about the girl, Esther. Both my agents appear to have become a little too sentimental."
But he said this with a smile. "Oppie is healing and will soon be delivered to his parents. He seems to have suffered no ill effects. But only time will tell."
"That's good news, then."
Modo sipped his tea.
"And what of Gibbons?"
Mr. Socrates shrugged.
"He was found in the Thames, a knife in his back. I assume the Clockwork Guild was finished with him."
Modo couldn't help but wonder if Mr. Socrates was telling the truth. Gibbons had, after all, been a double agent. It was best not to dwell on it. He buttered a croissant, watching as two swans landed in a pond in the distant gardens.
"I do worry about Oscar Featherstone," Modo said.
"Ah, that is an unfortunate situation. He will be hanged next week."
"But he's innocent."
"No one outside our circle knows about Hyde's tincture, so his lawyer cannot use it for his defence. Oscar did kill his father. There's no way to stop justice once its wheels have begun to roll."
"That's not fair."
Mr. Socrates shook his head.
"It's not about fairness, Modo. There are some things that cannot be revealed. It's that simple."
He got up from his chair.
"I want you to rest your mind and body. That's your assignment now. You're not to be concerned about the larger picture. All is unfolding as it should."
He took a step to go, then turned back.
"You have another visitor, by the way. I shall send her up."
Modo tapped his fingers together nervously. "Mrs. Finchley? Octavia?" He wasn't sure which one he wanted to see more. He didn't have time to change his face, but he made his body longer, his hump less obvious, and his shoulders a little wider. A minute later, Octavia appeared on the balcony in a blue dress and a thick white shawl.
The sight of her made him draw in a deep breath, and his nostrils whistled. Thankfully, she didn't seem to hear it. He wished he could take her for a walk in Kew Gardens. "Miss Milkweed," he said. "Mr. Modo. Apparently I owe you my life." "Yes," she said simply. "I'm not sure what overtook me. Perhaps you couldn't live without my sense of humour." She laughed. "I see you are feeling better." "Much better. Well fed, too. I'm as stuffed as a Christmas turkey." "Good. Good." She seemed distracted, not quite herself. Modo wasn't certain what to say, so he asked, "And how are you?" "I am well." A silence descended. She looked out over Kew Gardens and said, "It is a beautiful view. Especially now that you are here." He hadn't meant to say that out loud. Perhaps the drop of morphine he had taken had loosened his tongue. Octavia gave him a crooked smile. "There are two things that confuse me, Modo. The first is about myself. I don't know why I dove into that water after you. It felt as though it was about more than just trying to save a comrade." Modo wanted to say, "Maybe you have feelings for me," but he had already said something foolish enough. His heart was a hummingbird. "As I said, it confuses me. Why would I risk my life? Do you have an answer?"
"Me?"
"Yes, you."
I don't know," he said. He couldn't say another word. She was so beautiful, he thought, and he remembered his own revulsion each time he looked in the mirror.
"I am also confused about who you are, exactly. So far I have seen you with two faces, if that makes sense. It's impossible, but it was not my imagination. I'd like to know which one was real. I have to know what you look like. Then I will know who you are." "I can't explain it," he said. "Don't you trust me?"
"Yes, I do trust you, Octavia."
"Then show me your face, Modo. I beg of you. So I might know you. It's as simple as removing that mask."
It was that simple. He could just lower the mask, show his true self, and be done with it. But his hand faltered as he raised it. His face was not a face. It was a horrid hole where a face should be. She would take one look and that would be the end of everything. He couldn't show her now. Not ever. He was ugly. Mr. Socrates had told him so. He saw it himself every day.
"You cannot look at my real face," he said,
surprised that his voice only quavered a little.
"No one can ever see it."
She sighed softly.
"Very well," she said,
and silently walked into the house and was gone. Modo got up and went to the railing to stare out at the gardens. This was the way things had to be. It was better for both of them. Yes, it was. The birds began singing again. The sun was bright in the sky.